This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
To keep you in suspense.
Tired of the everyday grind.
Night transmissions. Everybody, this is Gary Clinton here with episode 95 of Night Transmissions. Now, I know that I'm usually promising at the top of these shows to just shut up and not bother you too much, and I'm going to do that this time. For real, I do want to tell you that because last week I finally had cataract surgery on one of my eyes, things are running a little bit behind. Wonderful thing, cataract surgery. If you need it, get it. They gave me an interesting drug. They don't put you under, but they do give you an IV. And whatever they gave me had no psychotropic effects whatsoever. I kept complaining. I mean, if I'm going to have surgery, I want to be stoned. But I didn't need it. Oh, I wouldn't say that the anesthesia had no effects. When I got out of the chair, they do this in kind of a recliner, I needed help to make sure that I didn't just fall over. My equilibrium, not the best in the world to begin with, became definitely more dodgy. They did my right eye on Monday, and they will do my left eye in about a month. So I truly am bright-eyed and maybe not so bushy-tailed. Anyway, if the show feels a little rushed and the website seems a little slapdash this week, well, that's why. I hope to be able to get back to a more normal next week. The first show tonight is from Theater 5, hailing back to October the 26th of 1964. It's called Including Murder.
If you were a loving wife, what would be the worst news you could get from a private detective about your husband? Is that right? You'll have another thing coming when you hear Including Murder on Theater 5.
Terrible having to do this, Mr. Norman.
I understand, Mrs. Bennett.
I mean, going to this length to spy on my husband.
Well, these things are never pleasant. But if there's something to what you suspect, you're better off knowing about it. I must ask you a couple of questions.
Of course.
The woman's name. It'll simplify my investigation.
I don't know her name.
Any idea where she lives?
No.
What about a description?
No, I haven't seen her.
You've never seen this other woman?
No, no.
But you're sure it's another woman.
Oh, what else can it be, Mr. Norman? When you're married to a man for 10 years and all of a sudden he changes, begins to act evasive, is annoyed with me, secretive, neglectful. Well.
Most likely, Mrs. Bennett, what you suspect is completely untrue. I don't feel bad about coming to see me. It'll be worth it if what I find out relieves your mind.
You're very kind, Mr. Norman.
A photograph of your husband will help.
Oh, yes, I have one in my bag.
And his place of business?
It's the Inter-Allied Import-Export Company, and William is the vice president. They're in the Atlas building.
I'll call you at your home the minute I have something to report.
Hi.
Oh, hi.
I've been on pins and needles looking out my window waiting for you to get home.
Naturally. I no sooner turn away than you pull right into the driveway. Oh, well, come on in, Jenny. I had to go into town for a while.
Margie, what's today? What day is it? The big day, Margie. Now, don't tell me you've forgotten. Our anniversaries.
Oh, is it today?
Oh, usually the husbands forget.
Yes. I'm so sorry. It completely slipped my mind.
Well, don't apologize. This is no day for apologizing. The night is for celebrating. Ken picked up 4 theater tickets for tonight. Now, I want you and William to join us.
Oh, first dinner, then...
Oh, now, please, Margie. We have something good to celebrate.
You know, I never lived next door to a neighbor before who happened to be married the same year and day I was married. Now, come with us tonight.
Oh, Jenny, it isn't me. You know that. You're very kind to invite us. But you also know that I am never sure lately when William gets home.
Well, call him right now. Before anyone else has a chance to...
Go ahead. Say it, Jenny. Before someone else has a chance to make an appointment with him.
I didn't mean it that way. I meant that... Oh, the devil with what I meant. Come out with us tonight.
It'll do you both a world of good.
Well, it'll certainly do me a lot of good.
And it might even have the same effect on William.
That a girl. Now get on that phone and...
Well, excuse me. Hello?
It's me, Margie.
Oh, William. I was just going to call you.
Forget about dinner for me tonight. Did you hear what I said?
I heard.
Business appointment.
Oh, aren't there any times during the day when you can make business appointments?
But I'll be quite late, so don't wait up for me. All right?
No, it is not all right. Jenny is here with me. She and Ken invited us to dinner and the theater tonight.
I can't tonight.
But it's our anniversary.
Marjorie, I'm sorry. I just can't make it tonight.
But Jenny already has the tickets for
us. I can't help that. Tell her to mind her own business anyway.
William, are you sure that yours is only a business appointment? Well, I'm sorry, Jenny, but these are the facts of my married life lately.
You know, it's an awkward time, Mrs. Bennett, but I thought it'd be better for you to come to my office rather than for me to go to your home.
I understand, Mr. Norman.
Please sit down.
Well, I don't mind standing.
Please, Mrs. Bennett, sit down.
You sound pretty ominous.
Do you know a man by the name of Ed Garson?
No.
He's short, dumpy, very mean face. You can't mistake him.
Neither the name nor the description rings a bell.
Would your husband know such a man?
Well, perhaps. Certainly I don't know all of my husband's business associates. William did call me earlier to say that he had a business appointment tonight.
Well, I'm talking about an afternoon meeting, Mrs. Bennett. It took place, let me read from my notes. William Bennett left his office at the Atlas Building, 2 p.m., took a cab to South Street.
South Street? That's a terrible section.
It is, Mrs. Bennett. I followed your husband into a bar on South and Willow Street. Mary was met by Ed Garson.
Mr. Norman, just what are you getting at?
I wish I could be absolutely sure.
Well, what does that mean?
Well, knowing what I do about Ed Garson, I can't imagine your husband having any business dealings with him other than...
Other than what?
Something illegal.
Do you mean criminal?
Not the way you mean criminal, Mrs. Bennett. Ed Garson is a professional gunman. He has a reputation as a hired killer. Unless I'm completely off base, your husband hired Ed Garson to kill someone. Maybe you.
How much do I owe you, Mr. Norman?
Consider what I say seriously, Mrs. Bennett.
How much do I owe you?
At least consider the possibility.
Did you hear that conversation?
No, I couldn't get close enough to that. But I did see your husband diagram something on a piece of paper which Garson put in his pocket. I also saw your husband give Garson some money. I don't ignore these facts, Mrs. Bennett. No matter how incredible they may sound, your life might depend
on... Here, this ought to satisfy even you.
Is your husband home, Mrs. Bennett?
No. Didn't I pay you enough, Mr. Norman?
May I come in, please?
I have nothing more to talk to you about.
But I have something more to talk to you about.
Well, come in if you must.
A lovely room, Mrs. Bennett.
It's comfortable.
Yes. Doesn't that rifle over the mantel look a little out of place in here?
William used to enjoy hunting. He keeps it there in case of burglars.
Loaded?
Well, I think so, yes. Mr. Norman, there was no need for you to come here. I thought that we had finished our business to your satisfaction.
Not at all to my satisfaction. You paid me too much for one thing, and... The more I think about what I've seen and what I see now, the more I'm convinced you need police protection.
Oh, Mr.
Now,
no.
Listen to me. You said your husband had a business appointment tonight.
I did.
Well, I got to thinking maybe you'd made a mistake.
Maybe he said afternoon and you thought he said tonight. It's just possible. So I was willing to change my mind about the purpose of his afternoon meeting with Garson simply on the basis of a misunderstood word, which is why I'm here now. Believe me, I was hoping to find your husband home, but he isn't, and I'm convinced now he won't be.
I wish
because
you...
he arranged with Garson not to get home until after...
Mr. Norman, please.
Can't you understand? I saw your husband make a deal with a professional gunman. Open your eyes, Mrs. Bennett. Garson's no thief, no gambler. He's a killer.
Oh.
It's his business. Can you think of any other reason, business, social, or otherwise, why a man like William Bennett meets a man like Ed Garson secretly and in the worst part of town?
You are very kind to be so concerned about me, but I just... Why? Why would William want such a thing done to me?
Is he in some kind of trouble?
Well, not that I know of.
Money, perhaps?
I don't think so.
What about insurance policies?
Well, we have them on both our lives.
How much?
Oh, $50,000. But this is fantastic.
A good friend of mine is on the police
force. No. Now, absolutely no. How can you suggest such a thing? William has a responsible position with his company, and I can't jeopardize his position.
But you can put your own life in jeopardy.
Well, I don't believe it. I won't believe it. I'll have a talk with William.
Maybe too late for talking. Let me call.
I said no, Mr. Norman, and I mean no. And I insist that you do not go to the police.
I can't promise that.
All right, Mr. Norman. I hired you. I'm hiring you again. You keep that money that you were going to return to me. And now I am entitled to your professional silence.
Please don't tie my hands this way.
I insist. I will settle this matter with my husband in my own way.
I'll keep phoning you.
Well, I would rather you didn't. I am grateful for your kindness and your concern, but there must be some other explanation.
I wish I could feel that, Mrs. Bennett.
Cheer up, Mr. Norman. At least you were right about one thing. It is not another woman.
I'm thinking of cleaning it.
Now?
No, later. I'll leave it here by the fireplace for now.
You're home early.
Yes, I got through sooner.
Have you eaten?
No, yes, I'm not hungry. What time is it?
8:30. William, what's wrong?
Well, what should be wrong?
Sit down, please, will you? I'm glad you're home early. I want to talk to you.
About what?
About us.
Why? Oh, I'm sorry I hung up on you this afternoon, and I'm very sorry about the anniversary.
Well, it's just as well. We've got a chance now to talk to each other.
I'll be right back.
Where are you going?
I get some cigarettes.
But I thought you gave up smoking.
Well, I did, but...
Oh, William. William, you're so tense. Please, what's wrong?
Nothing is wrong.
Oh, yes, something is wrong. Please, will you confide in me, William? I know we haven't been as close as a husband and wife should have been in these past few months. And I'm not blaming you as much as I blame myself. I can't remember when I've called you dear or darling. It's always been William. That sounds pretty cold, doesn't it? Now, I know that you're in some kind of trouble. I can see that you are, and I want to help. Please, dear, don't turn me away now.
Margie.
Oh, darling.
Why haven't you talked this way to me before? Yes, yes, I'm in trouble, a lot of trouble, but bad trouble. I've been going crazy trying to figure a way out.
Is it another woman?
Another woman? No, no. What makes you say that?
Well, then it's only money. And if it's only money, darling, then that's nothing.
$30,000 worth of nothing I stole from the company. $30,000.
Why? What for?
Gambling and losing. Nothing but losing and losing. It's been like a nightmare. I kept telling myself I'd just borrow this much and that much and just this much more. I was going to put it all back. But everything I bet on went sour. Now I'm scared. I can't keep the auditors from finding out. I'll lose everything. Everything I worked so hard for.
But why gambling?
What else was there to do? I don't mean it that way anymore, Margie. Now that you...
Shh. All right. It's all right. It's still only money. And we can borrow it somewhere.
I've tried 100 places in the past 2 months. There's no one left to borrow from.
Well, there is the policy on my life.
Oh, don't say such a thing. Maybe I wished it, but I've been out of my mind with worry. I don't want it that way now. Not when I know you'll stick by me.
Of course I'll stick by you. I don't know, maybe it has to be this way to bring us together again. I have friends. We'll raise the money.
What time is it? Oh, never mind. Margie, don't move from here. I'll be right back.
William! Hello?
Norman, Mrs. Bennett.
Oh, I'm so glad you called.
I'm glad you're there to get my call.
Nonsense, Mr. Norman. You will be glad to know that your fears were completely unjustified.
Look, I've got my friend, Lieutenant Factor.
No. I just told you. There's no need for that. William and I have talked things over, and it's only a little money trouble, and we can weather that.
Are you sure?
Positively. It's only money, and money is nothing.
Where's your husband now?
Well, that isn't important. Now, please, please, Mr. Norman. I do appreciate your concern, but there's no need for it anymore. William and I will be all right. And there is simply nothing, nothing at all to what you suspect.
Well, if you say so.
I do say so. And thanks again for your kindness. And now I've got to say goodbye.
Yeah. Goodbye, Mrs. Bennett.
Come on, Margie. We've got to go.
Go where?
Save the questions. There's no time.
No time for what?
Please, Margie. He'll be here any minute.
Oh. Who? Ed Garson?
Yes, Garson.
And you did hire him to kill me.
I told you I did.
You did not.
All right, not in so many words, but there's no time to quibble about that. It's almost nine.
Oh, William, is this my anniversary present?
Can't you believe I've changed my mind? Yes, I wanted the insurance money, but I don't want it that way anymore. Now, I just tried to call Garson. He's gone. He's on his way here. Please, please, Margie, we've got to leave right now.
And how do I know that you are not bringing me to him?
Oh, please, please believe me. Everything's changed. I swear it. As long as I know you'll stand by me, I'm not afraid of facing anything. I tell you, I've been out of my head. I even had a crazy plan worked up to kill Garson after he killed you. I'd make it look like he was a burglar. I was mad, out of my head. We've got to go now, Margie. Garson will be here any minute.
Wrong tense, chum. Garson is here. Me and my little gun here says nobody goes anywhere.
Now listen, Garson.
You talk only when I say you talk, right? Why, what a real nice scene that was. Just like in the movies. Good sound. Good picture. You've got my interest, chum.
Garson.
You crumb. You punk. Pull a double cross on me. On me.
It was all a mistake.
The biggest mistake you ever made, chum.
You got your money. There's no harm done. I call the whole thing off. Keep the money.
Floor plan and everything. No wonder you wanted it done here in the house. Where'd you figure to hit me?
At least, Garson. You've got the money. There's no need to go through with it. Leave.
I said, where were you going to give it to me? And I'm not asking a third time.
I don't know. Wherever I happen to see.
Like you just happened to come home, huh?
Yes, yes.
Why, you lousy...
Please, Mr. Garson. You must leave us alone.
Lady, I'm going to leave you both alone.
No. Oh, no.
Drop, Margie. Drop to the floor.
No. No, no.
You shot her. You shot her.
And you too, chum.
Mrs. Bennett!
Oh,
Margie, you're hurt. You're badly hurt.
It's not there.
You'll be all right. Please be all right.
I tried to warn her.
You'll be all right. Please be all right.
If I could just find what I want.
Uh-huh. What's that? That piece of paper.
A diagram of the house. I found it on Garson's body. A diagram of the house which you gave him.
What are you talking about?
You hired Garson to kill your wife.
No.
Don't tell me no. I saw you.
Yes, I hired him, yes, but I changed my mind. You've got to believe me. Ask my wife. She'll tell you. Margie, tell him I changed my mind.
It's so unfair. So unfair.
Oh, don't leave me now, Margie. You've got to tell him I changed my mind. Open your eyes, Margie.
He's dead, Bennett.
Oh...
And I'll see you get the book thrown at you. Everything the law calls for. Including murder.
Strange Adventure. Buck Davis and Bob Drake sat with their coffee before them, matching dollars. Buck took his hand off his coin to find that he had lost again.
Ah, that's enough for me. You're the luckiest guy I ever saw. I quit.
Bob laughed and put his own coin in his pocket. Well, you asked for it. I didn't want to take your money.
Hey, you haven't got it yet. You won't get it. We hit town. I'm short as it is.
Bob grinned. That's okay by me, but remember, I'll be right behind you all the way, so don't try to outrun me. The two men said goodbye to the waitress and left the little truck stop. Outside, they climbed into the high cabs of their respective trucks and, with a roar from the powerful diesels, started down the long grade on the highway to town. Buck Davis in the tanker truck and trailer was ahead, hauling high-tes gasoline. Bob Davis behind him had a load of pipe. At 3 o'clock in the morning, the road was almost void of traffic, and they ground on. The heavy trucks were held back on the steep grade by the gears. If they should jump out of gear, it would be almost impossible to stop them. With heavy loads like theirs, the brakes would soon burn out, and the trucks, with nothing to hold them back, would go careening through the night to end in a crash. This stretch of highway was one of the most dangerous on the run. It ran for miles straight as a string, and then at the bottom took a sharp right-angle turn. If a driver should misjudge his speed, there was nothing to stop him from hurtling off the road, perhaps to his death. Bob Davis grinned to himself in the darkness of his cab. Buck was his best friend, but by no means a fast man with a dollar. He hated to lose, and Bob knew that he might even have to work on him to get his 10. So he settled down to the monotonous grind of the long haul, his eyes on the running lights of the truck ahead of him. Suddenly he sat up. Buck in the tanker ahead was increasing his speed to the danger point. Bob muttered to himself, what a trick to play on a friend. With Buck's lighter load of gasoline, he could beat Bob into town and get away before the payoff. Bob jammed his foot down on the throttle. This was one time his friend wasn't going to get away with it. Both trucks went hurtling through the night. Bob huddled over the wheel, striving to overtake the truck ahead. The tanker increased its speed, and Bob suddenly realized that it must be out of control. It was only a few miles to the end of the grade, and he began to brake his truck. Ahead, he could see the tanker leap in the air as it went off the highway. The moment he came to a stop, he lit running from the cab. The tanker was turned over, and a small tongue of flame licked up. Bob rushed to his buddy's side. Later, with Buck in an ambulance, his only injury a broken leg, Bob started to climb back into his truck. A highway patrolman came up to him.
That was a brave thing you did, son, pulling your friend out of that wreck.
That wasn't bravery. I was sore. That guy owes me $10, and doggone if I was going to let him kill himself just to get out of paying it.
This is Pat McGeehan saying goodbye from my writer Charles Crowder and inviting you to listen again to another tale of Strange Adventure.
It's amazing how much you can learn about absolute strangers if you just stop to think about the kind of an animal they'll put in a test rocket. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Alex Clark. Test Rocket by Jack Douglas. Captain Baird stood at the window of the laboratory where the 1,000 parts of the strange rocket lay strewn in careful order. Small groups worked slowly over the dismantled parts. The captain wanted to ask, but something stopped him. Behind him, Dr. Johansson sat at his desk, his gnarled old hand tight about a whiskey bottle, the bottle the doctor always had in his desk but never brought out except when he was alone, and waited for Captain Baird to ask his question. Captain Baird turned at last. "They are our markings?" Captain Baird asked. It was not the question. Captain Baird knew the markings of the rocket testing station as well as the doctor did. "Yes," the doctor said. "They are our markings. Identical. But not our paint." Captain Baird turned back to the window. 10 minutes after launching, the giant test rocket had been only a speck on the observation screen. Captain Baird had turned away in disgust. "A mouse," the captain had said. "Unfortunate a mouse can't observe, build, report. My men are getting restless, Johansson." "When we are ready, Captain," the doctor had said. It was 12 hours before the urgent call from Central Control brought the captain running back to the laboratory. The doctor was there before him. Professor Schultz wasted no time. He pointed to the instrument panel. "A sudden shift. See for yourself. We'll miss Mars by 1.25 million at least." 2 hours later, the shift in course of the test rocket was apparent to all of them, and so was their disappointment. According to the instruments, the steering shifted a quarter of an inch. No reason shows up, Professor Schultz said. Flaw in the metal? Dr. Johansson said. How far can it go? Captain Barrett asked. Professor Schultz shrugged. Until the fuel runs out, which is probably as good as never. Or until the landing mechanism is activated by a planet-sized body. Course? Did you plot it? The doctor asked. Of course I did, Professor Schultz said. As close as I can calculate, it is headed for Alpha Centauri. Captain Baird turned away. The doctor watched him. Perhaps you will not be quite so hasty with your men's lives in the future, Captain, the doctor said. Professor Schultz was spinning dials. No contact, the professor said. No contact at all. That had been 6 months ago. Three more test rockets had been fired successfully before the urgent report came through from Alaskan Observation Post number 4. A rocket was coming across the pole. The strange rocket was tracked and escorted by atomic armed fighters all the way to the rocket testing station, where it cut its own motors and gently landed. In the center of a division of atomic armed infantry, the captain, the doctor, and everyone else waited impatiently. There was an air of uneasiness. You're sure it's not ours? Captain Baird asked. The doctor laughed. Identical, yes, but three times the size of ours. Perhaps one of the Asian ones? No, it's our design, but too large. Much too large. Professor Schultz put their thoughts into words. Looks like someone copied ours. Someone, somewhere. It's hard to imagine, but true, nevertheless. They waited 2 weeks. Nothing happened. Then a radiation-shielded team went in to examine the rocket. 2 more weeks, and the strange rocket was dismantled and spread over the field of the testing station. The rocket was dismantled, and the station had begun to talk to itself in whispers and look at the sky. Captain Baird stood now at the window and looked out at the dismantled rocket. He looked, but his mind was not on the parts of the rocket he could see from the window. The materials, they're not ours? The captain asked. Unknown here, the doctor said. The captain nodded. Those were our instruments? Yes. The doctor still held the whiskey bottle in a tight grip. They sent them back, the captain said. The doctor crashed the bottle hard against the desktop. Ask it, Captain, for God's sake! The captain turned to face the doctor directly. It was a man. A full-grown man. The doctor sighed as if letting the pent-up steam of his heart escape. Yes, it is a man. It breathes. It eats. It has all the attributes of a man. But it is not of our planet. It's speech, the captain began. That isn't speech, Captain, the doctor broke in, breaking in sharply. It's only sound. The doctor stopped. He examined the label of his bottle of whiskey very carefully. Good brand of whiskey. He seems quite happy in the storeroom. You know, Captain, what puzzled me at first? He can't read. He can't read anything, not even the instruments in that ship. In fact, he shows no interest in his rocket at all. The captain sat down now. He sat at the desk and faced the doctor. At least they had the courage to send a man, not a mouse. Doctor, a man. The doctor stared at the captain, his hands squeezing and unsqueezing on the whiskey bottle. A man who can't read his own instruments? The doctor laughed. Perhaps you, too, have failed to see the point. Like that stupid general who sits out there waiting for the men from somewhere to invade. Don't you think it's a possibility? The doctor nodded. A very good possibility, Captain, but they will not be men. The doctor seemed to pause and lean forward. That rocket, Captain, is a test rocket. A test rocket just like ours. Then the doctor picked up his whiskey bottle at last and poured 2 glasses. Perhaps a drink, Captain? The captain was watching the sky outside the window. The end.
I wouldn't get carried away or anything, but this is our first break. I promise not to be too annoying or anything.
I love tacos. It's great. chocolate tea. Chocolate flavored bathtub is mighty good for me. Mama puts it in my milk for extra energy. Bosco gives me iron and sunshine vitamin D. Oh, I love Bosco. That's the drink for me.
The next show is from Theater 1030. It's just called The Thing in the Hall. I'm not sure exactly what the date was on this. The program, Theater 1030, ran in the mid-60s.
Time to tell tales of the unaccountable, of apparitions by night and phantoms in shadow. Time to tell strange stories of fantasy and the supernatural. Theater 1030 presents The Thing in the Hall, a tale of the supernatural by E.F. Benson, in radio version by Alan King, and starring Chris Wiggins as Dr. Ashton and Henry Comer as Dr. Fielder.
I, Francis Ashton, am quite certain as a brain specialist that I am completely sane, and that these things happened not merely in my imagination, but in the external world. If I had to give evidence again about Louis Fielder, I should be compelled to take a different line. Please put that down at the end of your account or at the beginning if it arranges itself better, sir.
Now, Mr. Sayers, what is it exactly you want to do?
I want to read to you, Inspector, the complete statement which I took down from Dr. Ashton's dictation.
Well, can't you just tell me briefly what it says?
I'm afraid not. I know at a moment like this you don't want to waste time, Inspector, but if you'll give me half an hour, I think I can give you a full explanation of what has happened. And it's no good handing you the statement to take away because my handwriting is atrocious.
Very well, then, Mr. Sayers, go ahead. Now, I would like a little information first. You live in this street, too, do you?
Yes, about six houses down from here.
Mm-hmm. Friend of Dr. Ashton?
Yes, and Dr. Fielder lived on the same street. He was a friend of Dr. Ashton, too.
Oh, yes, I was at the inquest just last week. Suicide.
Yes, that was the verdict.
Dr. Ashton gave evidence at the inquest. Had he and Dr. Fielder been friends long?
Oh, they studied medicine together. Dr. Ashton specialized in diseases of the brain. You might say that Dr. Fielder specialized in everything. He was intensely interested in every branch of medicine. When Dr. Ashton came back to London after 5 years of study in Paris, he and Dr. Fielder resumed their close friendship.
After I returned from Paris, where I had studied under Charcot, I set up practice at home. The general doctrine of hypnotism, suggestion and cure by such means, had been accepted even in London by this time. And owing to a few papers I had written on the subject, together with my foreign diplomas, I found that I was a busy man almost as soon as I had arrived in town. Louis Fielder insisted that I take the vacant house next to his in what he called Chloroform Square. Oh, Louis, I don't know how I did without you for 5 years. You positively feed my brain. What about all those learned men in Paris? Charcot, for instance. Ah, they crammed it full of knowledge, but you feed it with ideas so that it can go on growing. You know, I have a theory about that.
Tell me. I believe that people who are ill because their brain is starving.
That's interesting. Go on.
Oh, because their brain is starving, their body rebels.
And becomes disease.
Yeah, I believe so. But they get lumbago or cancer or anything else. I believe that all bodily disease springs from the brain. Now, if the brain is fed and rested and exercised properly, the body will remain healthy and immune from all disease.
And if the brain is affected, medicines are useless.
Absolutely.
You might as well pour them down the sink. Unless your patient believes in them. That is an important limitation.
Ah, here we have suggestion again. Now, tell me, could you cure a patient by feeding him water and hypnotizing him into believing it was an unfailing cure?
Theoretically, I think it might be quite possible.
It's all right, old man. Don't jump.
It startled me. You really ought to muffle your knocker, at least during meals.
There isn't a knocker.
There isn't?
You were startled a week ago and said the same thing, remember? So I took the knocker off.
Then what?
You did hear a knock, didn't you?
Well, didn't you?
Oh, certainly. But it wasn't a caller.
It was the thing.
On that absurd remark, I rose to my feet and went to the door. But there was no one there. No one even nearby in the street. I shut the door and came back to the table. There was no one there.
I know, I told you. I said it was the thing.
Well, what are you talking about?
Well, I don't know what the thing is. That's what makes it so interesting.
Oh, come now, Louis. You're not suggesting it's a spirit knocking?
I say I don't know what it is. But we have to find an explanation. Now, you tell me why it can't be a spirit.
Oh, the whole idea of the influence of spirits on our lives has exploded, Louis. It's so easy for a hypnotist to understand how brain can act on brain. That's how he affects his cures. After surely anyone can understand that a strong mind can direct a weak one, just as a strong body can overcome a weak one.
And the only mental influence you will admit is from a brain in a living human body.
Well, of course.
Tell me, have you ever tried table tapping?
No, and I've never tried violet leaves as a cure for cancer.
Will you take part in an experiment?
Well, if you like.
You see, you don't understand what made that knock you heard. I want to see if I can bring you near to an explanation.
By table tapping?
Help me clear the table and you'll see.
You have a servant here, haven't you? Couldn't he have hammered at something?
I've heard the knock when he's been out.
Tell me, does your spirit perform in the prescribed fashion, one knock for yes and two for no?
I won't even agree that it's trying to speak to me. But you'll see. Now, there, everything's off. Sit down there, opposite me.
All right.
Now, first of all, try the weight of the table. See if you can push it about.
I can just move it. It's very heavy.
Solid mahogany. It would take the two of us to lift it. Now, put your hands on the top of it and see what you can do.
Yeah. Well, nothing, obviously. Now, of course, what we're going to do won't prove anything. You won't mean to push and neither will I, but we shall push and without meaning
well,
to...
Well, let's both put our fingers only on the top of the table and push for all we're worth. From right to left.
All right.
There. You see? It doesn't move.
What was that?
Same as before. The thing.
No, rot, I don't believe it.
All right. But I tell you, I've been studying rank spiritualism on and off for 5 years. And I haven't told you before because... I wanted to lay before you certain phenomena which I can't explain, but which now seem to me to be at my command. You shall see and hear, and then decide if you will help me.
And in order to let me see better, you're proposing to put out the lights?
Yes, and you will see why.
I am here as a skeptic.
Step away, Frank. Now, that's as dark as I can make the room. The glow from the fire in the grate won't matter. Put your hands on the table now, quite lightly. And, how shall I say it? Expect.
Still protesting in spirit, I expected. I could hear Louis' breathing rather quickened. And it seemed to me odd that anybody could sit in the dark at a large mahogany table expecting. Through my fingertips, laid lightly on the table, there began to come a faint vibration. Like nothing so much as the vibration through the handle of a kettle when water is beginning to boil inside it. And gradually, it got more pronounced and violent, till it was like the throbbing of a motor car. It seemed to give off a low humming note. Then, quite suddenly, the table seemed to slip from under my fingers and begin very slowly to move.
Stand up, Frank.
Keep your hands on the table and move with it.
It seems to be revolving.
Yes. Keep circling with it. Are you there? Are you there?
The table stopped moving.
I know.
Louis! Well, what's that light?
I see it moving across the table.
Like a firefly. There's another. And another. Shh, shh.
All stopped.
Yes. The lights, the sound, everything.
What do you think of it all, Frank?
Well, it's all stock stuff, isn't it?
In other words, you believe that all you saw and heard tonight was only suggested to you. All these things you've seen existed only in my brain.
Yes, I do. And what is your explanation?
Mine is that the thing was trying to communicate with us. It was the thing that moved the table and tapped and made us see the little lights.
Yes, but what is the thing? What is it? A spirit? Who's
no, name? No. I don't know, as I told you, what the thing is. But I believe it to be an elemental.
And what exactly is an elemental?
There are good things in this world and bad things, right?
No.
Honesty is good, lying is bad. Impulses of some sort direct both sides, and some power suggests the impulses. Well, I went into this spiritualistic business impartially. I learned to expect, to throw open the door into the soul, and I said, anyone may come in.
Ah, and so you made yourself receptive to any imaginings.
I think something has applied for admission. The thing tapped and turned the table and sent lights across it, as you saw.
Oh.
Now, in my theory, the control of the evil principles in the world is in the hands of a power which entrusts its errands to the things I call elementals.
Hmm. Well, that is only your theory.
Oh, they've been seen. I'm sure they'll be seen again. I did not, and I do not, ask good spirits only to come in. Nor do I want an elemental. I only threw open a door. I believe the thing has come into my house, and it's establishing communication with me. I want to find out. What is it? In the name of Satan, if necessary. What is it?
What was that?
Something blew a page of music off the piano at the other end of the room.
It's a current of air. It's coming towards us.
Look. It's ruffling those daffodils. And these candles.
I can feel it myself now. It's cold.
On me now. Look. Now. The fire. See the flames. Funny, wasn't it?
Has the elemental done up the chimney?
Oh, no. The thing only passed us. It only...
Frank!
What's that? Look! There, on the wall.
Huh? I see it. Is it like a shadow? It's the shadow of an enormous slug.
See? At one end, a sort of head. There's a lolling tongue out of the mouth.
It's moving.
No, it's
fading. It is going away.
I said I was ready for any visitor to come in. And by heaven, we've got a beauty.
Even then, I was still convinced that I was only taking observations of a most curious case of disordered brain, accompanied by the most vivid and remarkable thought transference. And when, after 6 months of constant watching, the thing did not appear to us again, I began to feel that we were really wasting time. However, as a last resort,
I suggested that we get in a so-called medium, induce hypnotic sleep, and see if we could learn anything further. As before, we sat round the dining room table, Louis and I, and Cyril Miles, the young medium. The room was not quite dark, so that I could see quite clearly what happened. The first step was to put young Miles into a light, hypnotic sleep, which I did with ease. There. He's asleep now.
I feel we are going to see something this time. I'm sure.
Well, if not, this is my last experiment. As I told you, I do.
It's here again. It's with us.
Well, we want more than wraps. We...
Louis, look! I see it. I see it.
Slide across the table. Its shape is clearer this time, Louis. It's luminous all the way along.
Look, now, peering up at the medium.
Waving its head in front of him like a flag.
Look, is he awake? Can he see it?
No.
He's asleep with his face. I never saw such terror. He must see it.
No, I tell you. He'll sleep till I wake him.
Is it? Frank, it's got him.
You were quick and hold it.
I can't. Time is that nothing to hold on to?
Frank, we've got to. It'll kill him. We can get our hands on this head.
Wait. I know. The lights. Turn on the lights.
Lights. Oh, it's gone. Medium. On the floor, Frank. Is he dead? I don't know.
Help me up with him.
Right. Here, into the chair.
That's it.
Frank. Look at his throat. What? Those marks, see?
Oh. Two little punctures.
They're bleeding slightly. Up here. I'll see if I can wake him.
My God. All gone.
It's all right, Miles.
My throat seems to be... Is this what?
It's nothing.
Do you not remember what happened to you?
No. No, I never have any recollection of what happened to me in a trance.
That's elementary, Louis. A hypnotic sleep is different from ordinary sleep in that no recollection whatever persists.
My throat. It's a little painful. Was there something, a struggle?
There was nothing unusual. You wrestled with something while you were asleep and sustained a scratch or two, that's all.
Oh, I see.
I'll call a cab. I think you'd better go home and rest. Dr. Fielder will attend to the scratches on your throat.
The scratches on his throat?
Oh, if I had known that night what was to happen later. I lay awake thinking. The elemental had been there in a form that could be seen and felt. But I told myself... It was only a thing of twilight. The sudden kindling of the light had shown us there was nothing there. In the struggle, perhaps the medium had clutched his own throat. Perhaps I had grasped Louis' sleep. Perhaps he had grasped mine. But though I said these things to myself, I'm not sure that I believed them in the same way that I believe the sun will rise tomorrow. I was so busy with my practice that it was a week before I saw Louis again. I brought news that I expected would shock him. But it was I who received the greater shock. I thought I noticed a change in his appearance, but it was not until I had announced my news that the full realization came upon me.
Have I seen the evening paper? No. What does it say?
It's about Cyril Miles, our young medium. He died this morning of blood poisoning.
Good. Louis.
I say good. We have our proof now, haven't we? Our elemental is no longer a thing of our imagination. It exists. It has power. And this is the proof.
Our elemental? It's no thing of mine.
Oh, yes, it is. We've both seen it.
Oh,
did we imagine those marks on Cyril Miles' throat? Did we imagine his death?
He died from blood poisoning. He
He may have come anyhow by those scratches.
You know that isn't true. Frank, look at me. Look into my eyes. Now, tell me you don't believe.
Louis.
Tell me.
Oh, God help you, Louis. God help us both.
What do I need with God's help? I have a power on my side now that no man has ever had before. Think of it, Frank. Those two elemental forces that have striven through the centuries for the mastery of the world, good and evil, and from the depths of hell, I have summoned up the element of evil. Mine is the power and the mastery.
I fled from Louis Fielder's house, his mocking laughter ringing in my ears till I'd entered my own front door. And at that moment, I wished myself on the other side of London, no longer neighbor to the creature that Louis had become. After that, I avoided him as much as I could. But it was not always possible. Several weeks after the last meeting I've described, I was just turning into my house late one night when I was startled by a terrified screaming from his house. And in spite of myself, I rushed to the door, and finding it open, I ran in. And the sounds had stopped by the time I found him.
Louis! Louis!
Louis, what's the matter? What's been happening?
You heard, did you? What did you think it was? My elemental got out of control.
Louis, what were those screams? What? Oh, good heavens.
Now you see it. A moment too late. I couldn't prolong its death any further.
The cat. Louis, what have you done?
Material for a scientific paper, my dear doctor. Trying to get to the bottom of the ridiculous myth that a cat has 9 lives.
Oh, you out of your mind.
9 lives. Silly, isn't it? There are grounds for the belief, though. I proved that. A cat hangs on, Frank, hangs on, hates to give up. I was trying to see how much pain it could stand before it would give itself up to death.
Torture.
Isn't that what cats do with mice? The cat and mouse game, Frank. Only I was the cat, and my cat was the mouse. Only fair, isn't it? Does a cat and a mouse horrify you? Then why should I?
Louis.
The power, Frank. The power.
More than ever, I tried to avoid him. But it was hard to forget. I thought of moving, but something held me to that place. I knew that sometime something had to be resolved. But before the end came, I spent one more evening with Louis. Strange stories had begun to come to me. Stories of his depravity in all branches of his life and morals. It was becoming a matter of common knowledge. I would shudder as I passed his house, expecting I knew not what fiendish thing to be looking at me from the window. And then, one night, as I came home and entered my living room, there he was, seated in a comfortable chair, grinning evilly at me as I stood in the doorway.
Come in, come in. Make yourself at home.
Louis!
It's all right, I didn't break in. Your housekeeper admitted me.
Oh.
Aren't you going to sit down?
Yes, of course. As a matter of fact, now that you're here, there is something I want to say to you.
Good. Good. Fire away.
Well, I won't be subtle. I've heard things, Louis. Everywhere in town there's talk of you. Your behavior has become a scandal. People come to me with stories knowing we're friends. I try to turn them aside. You tell them anything.
Louis...
Won't you let me help you? It's not you that's doing all these things. You're possessed. You're mentally ill. I could help you, Louis.
Gossip and scandal, eh? I know it's all over town, isn't it? But I've a story to tell you, Frank. We hasn't got far yet. It only happened today.
What? What is it, Louis?
I was turned out of my club for cheating at cards.
No way.
Sounds like a cheap novel, doesn't it? But it was great. You should have seen them, Frank. Gentlemen, honest and true, shocked to their very souls. It would have been bad enough if I'd merely cheated, but what rocked them was that I stood up and laughed out loud, ridiculed them to their self-righteous faces. And then I stood there and looked into their eyes. And they were silent. They were frightened. They felt the power that was in the room. I despised them. And when I turned on my heel and walked out, they sat there in a dumb and terrified silence. Oh, Frank, the power, the elemental power.
I never saw him again until a week ago. If you were at the inquest, you heard my evidence. But to no court on earth, to no human being, could I describe the sound that filled the street and woke me from sleep that ghastly morning. I ran out of the house in my pajamas, out into the street. The policeman on the beat had heard it too, and together we burst open the door into Louis' house. The screaming had ceased a moment before we gained entry. He was there in the hall, dead when we reached him. Both jugulars were severed and torn. It was dawn, early and dusky, when I got back to my house next door. Even as I went in, something seemed to push by me. Something soft and slimy. It could not be Louis's imagination this time. Since then, I've seen glimpses of it every evening. I'm awakened at night by tappings. And in the shadows of my room, there sits something more substantial than a shadow.
In the corner of my room, there sits something more substantial than a shadow. That is the end of the statement Dr. Ashton dictated to me, Inspector.
Exactly, when did he give this statement to you, Mr. Sayers?
He finished dictating about an hour before I met you here in his house.
Were you the first to get there?
Yes. One of the neighbors summoned a constable, but it was 5 minutes before he arrived.
Will you tell me exactly what happened?
Well, I heard a terrible cry. It seemed to fill the street. It must have been like the one he describes that he heard the night Dr. Field had died.
Were you awake?
Yes. I was reading over his statement. Immediately I heard the screaming, I dashed out onto the street and made for his house where it was coming from. His housekeeper was standing at the open door, speechless with terror. I pushed by and made my way to his study.
Where was Dr. Ashton?
On the floor in the study. He could have been dead at the most 2 minutes. There was no need to make an examination. I could see his throat from where I stood. Both jugulars were severed and savagely torn.
Theater 1030 has presented The Thing in the Hall, a tale of the supernatural by E.F. Benson, in radio version by Alan King, starring Henry Comer as Dr. Fielder and Chris Wiggins as Dr. Ashton. Alfred Gallagher was heard as Sayers, Alan King as the police inspector, and Cease Montgomery as Miles the medium. Sound effects were by John Sliz. Technical operation, Fred Park. Theater 1030 is a CBC Toronto presentation. This is Bill Lorne speaking.
Oh, okay, we're going to take a quick break here now, but we'll be back real soon. Here comes the vanishing point from October the 4th of 1984 in the Grove.
The call of the open road. Man and boy and bike. No hurry. And the freeway stretching out forever. Or so it seems. Clean your goggles. Between the flies and the sweat, you'll see the truth. The freeway is flying towards a point on the horizon. The vanishing point.
Want a bit of this?
No, thanks.
Ribbit. Ribbit. Lonesome Creek doesn't quite live up to its name, does it? We're not lonesome, and it sure doesn't sound like any of our friends out there are lonesome.
I guess not.
Are you warm enough? You can sure tell it's August when the sun goes down. I think that storm's gonna blow over. We probably could have kept going after all, but we're not in any hurry, right? It's nice here. We'll get a good start in the morning. I'll just have me a little smoke and catch up on my journal writing. Hey, you go on into the tent if you get sleepy.
I'm not sleepy. Dad.
Is something troubling you, Josh?
I heard you tell Aunt Edie and Uncle Robert I might be coming to live with you.
Well, now that's one of the things we're going to talk about before this trip is over.
You mentioned it to them before you say one word to me.
Well, it came up in conversation. They wanted to know how you were doing in school, how your mama was, things like that. I just mentioned it as a possibility, that's all.
Yeah, right. Yeah, not one word to me.
All right, I apologize. I guess I was waiting for the right moment. Some romantic nonsense about us out in a canoe and sitting around in the campfire after cooking our own fresh caught fish. And I'd bring it up, paint myself in an extremely favorable light, how much fun we'd have, and so on and so forth.
You don't need to paint yourself in a favorable light.
No?
No.
Why, thank you. Would you like to come and live with me, Josh?
I don't know. Dad, could you teach me how to wave so that people wave back at me like they do to you?
I saw you were practicing your waving all day.
They all wave at you.
Well, now they don't all wave at me.
A lot of them do.
Well, maybe. But I really don't have a special signal to get bikers and truckers to wave at me, you know. I don't know of such a thing. I mean, you tried all kinds of ways of waving today, and of course, sometimes the bikers and truckers waved at you, and sometimes they didn't. I hope it doesn't take you as many years as it's taken me to learn that I don't make people do things. My waving at the bikers and truckers, your waving at the bikers and truckers, is only one of the variables involved. Well, the guy who doesn't wave may be thinking about where he's going to spend the night or how much longer he can go before he takes a piss. And the guy who does wave, well, maybe he needs to feel generous or waves at everybody like the Queen of England or just got laid and is feeling good. Who knows? But I'll tell you one thing.
What's that?
Oh, a motorcycle riding seems to be good for sorting things out.
What sort of things?
Why, any old thing. Hey, do you mind if I try out a few of my brilliant thoughts and insights on you?
Go ahead. Sometimes I can't follow you, though.
That's what my students say. Anyway, I'll just shoot my mouth off and toss out a few things I've been thinking about all day while you were practicing your waving. They have to do with motorcycle riding and Grandma Weaver.
Grandma Weaver? Dad, she didn't even recognize us. I can understand she might not recognize me, but she didn't recognize you.
Hey, now hold on. What makes you so sure she didn't recognize us? Now, just hold your horses.
We were standing right there, right by her bed, and she starts talking about her son up in Canada and how the kids don't live with them and so on.
Okay, I admit it's pretty disconcerting. But don't you think it's pretty interesting how we arrive and after Aunt Georgie says, Mother, here's some visitors for you, she opens her eyes and almost immediately starts talking about us?
But she was talking about us as though we weren't there right in front of her. One of the boys is up there in Canada. He's a college professor up there. It rains a lot up there in Canada. What's your name? Gave me the creeps.
Well, what she said seemed to make sense to her. Didn't seem to give her the creeps.
But even when you told her your name and my name, she didn't recognize us. How do you explain that?
Not just at the minute, I don't explain it, but I'm working on it. And the fact that she didn't use my name or your name the whole time we were there doesn't necessarily mean she didn't recognize us.
Oh, no, not necessarily.
Now, don't always take the easy explanation, Josh. I mean, if you want to get the most out of the brains you were so obviously born with, you've got to poke. You've got to challenge. You've got to rock the damn boat. I need to know a whole lot more about the brain. About what really gets stroked when somebody has a stroke. You know, Josh, everybody who's seen Grandma Weaver says she's really mixed up and is in bad shape mentally. And that's what I would have thought from all the letters that people have written me. People have known her all their lives. Until I saw her the other day. Now I'm not so sure. Now I think she's just using language, maybe even using memory in a way that I haven't thought about before. I think I might be onto something central about the way brains work.
Where do the motorcycles fit in?
Well, now, that is really interesting. You see, there's something powerfully paradoxical about riding a motorcycle on a trip. I mean, not just the real interesting thing that because I'm up in front and you're hanging on behind and we both got our helmets on so there's no chit-chat like there would be in a car or a bus and yet our bodies are close. You've got your arms around me part of the time and it feels good, feels natural. But there's a whole different kind of reality going on. You know, something about paying close attention to the business of staying on the road. I mean, going fast on winding roads requires close attention. The margin for error is so small. At 60 miles an hour through a corner might be only a couple of inches wide on some corners. Adding a few more miles an hour through that corner might cut the groove down by half or more. You've got to pay attention. But the paradox is that paying such close attention to driving seems to stir up and integrate a whole lot of other things. I mean, I have more insights and ideas riding on that motorcycle than I have in a month behind my desk back home. It doesn't work that way on the freeway, though. It's too easy on the freeway. Maybe most of us live our whole lives on the freeway. Kind of stupor. Josh. Hey, Josh. Well, I knew I was boring, but I didn't realize I was that boring. Hey, son, you've got to wake up and crawl into the tent. You're too big to carry.
Well, I'm fine. Leave me alone.
Now, come on now. Come on.
I'm fine. Just leave me here. It's warm.
But I'm ready for breakfast. I'm hungry.
Sorry I fell asleep on you last night.
Hey, that's perfectly all right. I ended up falling asleep on myself. Woke up in the middle of the night with the fire out, a very cold riding hand, my glasses still on, and slobber drooling out of my mouth.
And that flash. they just never materialized. I get up in the middle of the night to put the horses away, and nothing happened. We're going to get it, though. Maybe tonight, or maybe tomorrow morning, but it's coming.
Where are you going, Josh?
I got to go to the John.
Okay, I'll just peel off a few layers of clothing in order. What do you want?
I don't know. Pancakes, guess.
Hi there. Do you want menus or just coffee?
Oh, hi there.
Oh, you were in here yesterday.
Yeah, that's right. Although storm clouds were building up so much and looked so threatening, we hightailed it back to Lonesome Creek where we got some exercise and a good night's sleep. Oh, Rose's Cafe, huh?
Yep.
Are you Rose?
Oh, never was any Rose that I know of. My name's Margie.
Ah, well, I'm Gary, and the boy in the old boys' room is my son Josh. Well, Margie, with a hard G, we want breakfast, but we don't need menus. We know what we want.
Fire away.
Okay, we have a large orange juice, steak medium rare, hash browns, and coffee. For Josh, buttermilk hotcakes and a large milk.
Okay, you want your coffee now?
I'd love my coffee now.
One steak, medium rare, hash browns.
Over here, Josh.
Chicken, buttermilk.
What'd you get me?
Large
hotcakes.
Oh, good.
Hey, that stuff I was going on about last night, did it make any sense?
Which stuff?
Well, the stuff about Grandma Weaver.
I think I fell asleep too early on. Dad, does Mom know about me maybe going to live with you?
She knows. Oh, I wrote her a letter about it. If she read the letter, she knows.
She hasn't written back or called or anything?
Well, I wrote just before we left. I wanted her to have time to think. Maybe talk out loud to herself and say a few things she wouldn't want you to hear.
Things about you?
Maybe.
She doesn't like you.
I know that.
She really doesn't like you.
I know that, too. Do you remember me talking about motorcycles and grooves?
A little bit. Dad, can I drive today?
Maybe. On a side rope. Ah, sure. Then you'd find out about the groove. Anyway, you know how we say things are groovy or in the groove?
Well, maybe you do.
Okay, but jazz musicians say it, and we all said it in the 60s. Grooving on the sunshine, etc., etc. Well, it all fits together.
Sorry, you've lost me. What fits together?
Well, the basic idea is that there's a groove that I can follow that's exactly right for me to live in an optimum way. Guiding that motorcycle down the groove through a corner has become a metaphor for living in a tuned-in, turned-on way, responsive to things as they come and yet selective for things to respond fully to. You see?
High River Fire Department.
I'll see you boys later. That calls for me.
Okay, now, where was I? Oh, yeah, and Grandma Weaver, well, she's in the group as
you
well.
You fellas didn't get as far as you wanted to yesterday.
There. No, we got worried about the weather and went back down to Lonesome Creek. Decided to come back here for breakfast, though. This sure is a good place to eat.
You think so?
Yes, I do.
Hey, Dad, can I have some money for the jukebox?
Oh, you out of money already.
No.
Here, play Anne Murray. I like to listen to her.
Well, I don't.
Hey,
I...
now go ahead, then you can choose the next one.
That's not Anne Murray.
I must have pushed the wrong button.
Look, it says R3 Anne Murray, Snowbird. Did you push R3?
I don't know. I thought I did.
Hey, look, here's your quarterback.
It don't matter.
Missed the damn fire truck. I waited at the corner for ages and no damn truck came by. Hey, Margie, bring me a fresh coffee, will you?
In a minute.
They shouldn't serve people like that in here.
People who miss fire trucks?
There's a lot of weather in them clouds. And you fellas are on a motorcycle, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. We've just come back from Shelby, Montana, where we've been visiting his great-grandma and all his great-aunts and uncles.
That's so.
Yeah.
I got my driver's license taken away from me now. I had to get a physical exam to get a health card so as I could work in this restaurant. And she didn't put no ketchup on your table. Hang on, I'll get some.
Dad, I don't want him talking to us while we're eating.
Well, look, we're not eating yet, are we? He's just somebody who wants to talk, that's all. Well, maybe he's lonely. Sometimes I think I don't travel, I just go to see people.
Anne Murray.
Here you are. And here's your juice.
Yeah, thanks. Do you think you could hurry them up in the kitchen? You see,
any minute now. The doctor said I had something wrong with my brain and I'd have to see a specialist. I got epilepsy. You know what that is? Epilepsy?
Sort of. I'm going to play Buddy Holly. I like those songs. I'll use my own quarter.
Josh, everybody thinks I'm crazy. They say I am, and maybe I am. But I know something that they don't know.
Oh, yes. And what's that?
Here you are. Sorry it took so long.
Thanks, Margie.
Earl, Harry needs you in the kitchen.
Tell Harry I'll be there in a minute.
He needs you right now.
Hey, Margie, have you seen the show at the drive-in?
No, but I'm not going with you. I may be blonde, but I'm not dumb.
Oh, you want a bit?
Oh. And if you boys want anything more, you just let me know. Blueberry pie will be ready in about 10 minutes.
Thanks. We just might wait around for something like homemade blueberry pie.
Hey, Margie, how about that coffee, huh? And bring me 2 of them jelly donuts when you get a minute or 10.
Ah, hold your horses.
Hadn't you better go give Margie a hand? She's all right. Don't worry about her. Now me, I've got the mind of a little girl that died.
Dad!
It's okay, Josh. Eat your pancakes.
When they sent me over to Calgary to that specialist, he put me on a table and put some needles in my head, but wouldn't let me see what he was doing.
Dad, please.
What's the matter? Am I upsetting your stomach? Just made me lay there with my head covered up for the longest time. I just laid there and never said a word. But they had this little girl there at the same time who died. She might have been dead at the time, or she might have died later. I don't know. But I think I know how she died. What they did when they put those needles in my head. They put her brain in my head. At least the nerve section.
Dad, let's go.
Look at, hold your horses, Josh. I haven't finished my breakfast.
Well, I have. I'm finished. I'm going to look at the postcards and I'll meet you outside.
Josh.
Hurry up.
Let him go. Kids don't want to know about nothing. Ever since then, I've had this vision. Or a dream. Her dream. No. I don't know if it's her dream or her memory, but I can see it plain as day, just like I was there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like I was there in that little girl's body. She was on a wheat combine. She'd ridden a horse out to it with 2 other kids. I can see their bodies, but their faces are blanks. Mm-hmm. Like their faces had been erased, maybe.
Anybody out there want fresh blueberry pie?
Oh, yes, please.
Yeah, I'll have a piece over here, Margie.
Okay.
Would you like to join me in a piece of fresh blueberry pie?
No, thanks. Crust tastes like cardboard, and he puts too much sugar in.
Well, suit yourself. You know, your story is really amazing. It's funny, but it fits in with the very things I've been thinking about on this trip.
Say, who are you? Are you a doctor?
No. Well, not kind of doctor you mean, but I'm very, very, very interested in the brain.
You make a difference between the brain and the mind?
Oh, certainly.
Dad, are you coming or not?
Look, 5 more minutes, Josh.
Here you are.
Thanks. Listen, I'd better pay now. My boy's getting anxious to hit the road.
Okay. Harry's getting more than anxious, Earl. Harry's getting fed up. That $13.50 counting the pie.
Well, here's $15.
Oh.
Food and the service are first rate.
Why, thank you.
Margie, you're wanted up front.
I'm coming. Did you find some postcards you liked?
A couple. I'd like this old Henry bar, too.
So soon after breakfast?
It's for later. Tell my dad I'll be outside.
Help!
course there's a distinction. I mean, I could hold a dead man's brain in my hands, turn it around, feel its weight, and so on, but unless I had known the man or read about him or heard about him or read something that he'd written, I wouldn't know anything about his mind. So it's the little girl's mind you think you have, right?
That's right. You want to hear exactly how it was?
I certainly do.
You mind if I sit down?
Go right ahead.
You know, when those doctors were putting the little girl's mind in my head, I could feel her mind coming into me.
You could feel her mind coming?
I could feel it coming, and I just let it come. I was laying there with dark clouds over my head for a long time, listening. I could tell that there was someone else nearby, but I didn't know that it was the little girl. The doctors were working on somebody, though. And then I felt this other mind coming, this other memory, and I knew I needed to be very still and let it come. I simply turned my own mind off. I said, mind, stop thinking. Stop thinking. And my mind just calmed down and quieted down real smooth.
Real smooth.
There wasn't nothing happening in there. I just waited. And pretty soon, here she came. She came in just like she'd been there forever. And I could see everything that happened on the wheat combine just like I was there. Everything. But those other kids' faces, there was just blanks instead of their faces. And the interesting part is that it's just that one part that I can see. And it's as clear as day. But nothing else. And even that part just stops blank. That man whipped the horse once and it didn't do nothing. But then he whipped it again and it took off running and dragged that little girl clear across the wheat field. But the vision just stops blank after a few seconds, and she's bouncing and screaming and the horse's hooves are pounding in the dirt, and then click. Nothing more. I wonder if that's when she died.
Oh, that's incredible. Tell me, do you have epileptic fits?
Well, I used to. I don't have the fits anymore. I've got all that under control. But I sure have her memory. All the time, over and over.
Earl!
I'm coming.
Yeah, Earl, stop filling that nice man's head full of lies.
Lies? Lies, is it? You think that's strange, what I just told you?
Yeah, strange and wonderful. What an amazing experience to have had.
Not so amazing when you have to live with it day after day after day. When you...
Earl.
You see that man over there?
Where?
The one that called out to me. The bastard over there in the big hat.
Oh, yeah, I see him. You two don't exactly seem to be kissing cousins.
Kissing? He was there. Two on that combine. And this little girl had ridden up and tied the reins onto her hand. Well, that man over there took a bullwhip. There was a bullwhip there on the combine. And he began whipping that horse and whipping that horse and whipping it. Lord, how he whipped that horse. I don't know why. Well, it started to run off, dragging that little girl. I remember all that. It didn't happen to me. It happened to her. But I got her memory up there in that hospital. Now I can't get rid of it. It's inside me for good, like a footprint in cement. I can't stand it. I can't tolerate it much longer.
I have to go now. Thanks for telling me your story.
It's pretty weird, isn't it?
Pretty weird, all right. Mm-hmm. Have you asked him about the little girl?
Who?
Kolosov?
Yeah. He told me I was crazy, that he didn't know nothing about any dead little girl. He tells everybody I'm off my rocker. He'll tell you if you ask him. But he hasn't always lived near here. Mm-hmm. He comes from someplace else, someplace near Saskatoon. How do we know what happened over there in Saskatoon?
Yeah, but the little girl who died was in Calgary. Why would they send a girl with a head injury all the way from Saskatoon to Calgary?
I don't know. I'm not a doctor. He may never have come from Saskatoon at all. He just says his name is Kolosoff and that he comes from Saskatoon and that he never knew no little girl in the wheat field. Earl, I really have to go now. You don't believe me, do you?
Well, I believe that you believe it.
You don't know what it feels like. Having somebody else's memory inside your head. That man on the combine and the bullwhip. The sound of it. And the horse dragging that little girl and her screams. I hope nothing like that ever happens to you.
I hope not.
Earl!
I'm coming. I'm coming.
Sorry I was so long.
Having breakfast with a lunatic?
Hey, I don't know about that. You didn't hear the whole story. I mean, it's his way of making sense out of the world. Just like with Grandma Weaver. I mean, it's so easy to call it craziness. It's too easy.
Boy, have I got a lot to think about.
Okay, hang on. Here we go.
Hey, Dad, you know what Mom says? She says you never listen to anybody. Says you don't have the first idea, but listen.
Well, look, I know you're feeling a bit fed up with me just now, Josh, but let's leave your mother out of it, shall we? If you want to fight, let's fight fair.
Just go. Just get going. I'd never live with you.
Look, we'll talk about it later.
I don't want to talk about it. My decision's final.
So you say.
Bikers, the truckers, they all talked to him, seemed to know him. But Granny Weaver didn't recognize him. And sometimes Josh finds him a little hard to follow. Josh is riding right there behind him, but he's a blind spot in his father's rearview mirror. The mirror only reflects the freeway falling away behind him to vanishing
Thomas. Featured in the cast were Gary Chalk as Gary and Sean Clements as Josh, with Tom Heaton as the man, Cam Lane as Kolosoff, and Elena Shields as Margie. Original music was by Don Druick, with Christopher Robertson and Karen Erickson Koch. Technical operations were by Chris Cutress, with sound effects by Jay Hirene, and the production assistant was Dagmar Kafanka. The series theme is by John Roby. The script editor is Sandra Rabinovich, and the voice of Vanishing Point is David Calderisi. In the Groove was produced and directed at CBC Vancouver by John Giuliani. The executive producer of Vanishing Point is William Lane.
Guess what? This is a break. No, I don't really like it either. At least I gotta run off and hide until it's over. I'll be back real soon.
finishing up this week with Tales from the Morgue. Again, I'm not really sure of the date. They're all relatively recent. I think this one comes from sometime in the 1980s.
And now M&J Audio Theater presents Chet Cheddar's Tales from the Morgue.
Come right in, stranger. Do have a seat, won't you? There. You seem a bit hot. Let me fetch you a glass of lemonade. There you are. It is refreshing, isn't it? Yes. Well, allow me to introduce myself. I am Chet Cheddar. I am the morgue attendant here, and it gets a bit lonely. That is why whenever I receive visitors, I enjoy telling them stories. I would love to tell you one, if you have the time. Oh, well, good. Well, now, let's see. I think today I will tell you about a man named Elmer Korn. I have many stories about this man. By trade, Mr. Korn is a manure hauler from Biloxi. However, he seems to have a knack for getting himself into some unusual situations. Well, now, my story begins one summer morning, on a Tuesday, I believe. It was 5:30 a.m., and Mr. Korn was beginning his day.
Ooh. Dead gum. 5:30 already? I tell you, this fast-paced life I lead. Well, goodbye, blissful slumber. Hello, Tuesday morning. All right, Elmer. That's enough procrastinating. It's time to get out of bed and begin our day. Let's see what we got on the calendar here. Let's see what I'm going to have to do today. Let's see. Tuesday. Oh! Got to deliver 60 pounds of manure to Duluth, Montana. Well, all right. I hadn't been to Duluth in quite a while. Well, let's see. I guess I'll go outside and see if the boys delivered the paper yet. Oh, boy, what a beautiful morning. Hello, world. Yeah, let's see here. The boy usually throws the paper by the fence. Yeah, it's still a little too dark to see. Boy, I got a bad case of sewer breath. I got to remind myself to brush my teeth when I get back inside. Oh, there's paper right over there. Yes, sirree, Bob, right by the fence, just like every day. Well, now, let's see what the good news is. Yeah. Biloxi, baffled and bewildered. The population of Biloxi continues to dwindle, say police, who have been investigating the disappearances of three citizens since yesterday morning. Police Chief Lester Korn says he is unable to link the disappearances with the dozens of UFO sightings that have been reported over the past 24 hours. Oh, come on now. Dang it. It's a sad state of affairs when the Biloxi Gazette resorts to this sort of sensationalism, like the National Enquirer. Well, I can't read no more of this garbage on an empty stomach. I got just enough time to go inside and fix me a bologna sandwich.
Stop the baby. No. Oh, wait a minute. I'm still standing. Oh, thank you, Lord. I think maybe it was a meteor. It fell right over here at... No, wait a minute. That ain't no meteor. That there's a real live flying saucer.
Yes, you heard correctly. A flying saucer. Mr. Korn, being the inquisitive man that he is, picked up a stick and poked the side of the vessel several times. Suddenly, a hatch opened, causing Mr. Korn to recoil in fear. He peered into the saucer, expecting something or someone to exit. But nothing did.
Hello.
The suspense was more than even Mr. Korn could withstand. Reluctantly, he entered the saucer.
Hello? And gum. Boy, there's lights and all kinds of stuff going on in this thing. Shoot far. Hey, there's a little blue fella right over there by that. Uh-oh. Oh, he's in bad shape.
Whoa! Cleabar to Ardeck 4. Cleabar to Ardeck 4. All scout ships are ordered to return to the planet Tontanium at once.
Please
return at once. Confirm transmission.
Boy, you scared the bejeebus out of me. What was that, sir? I didn't quite understand you the first time.
Earth creature, state your intrusion on the Tontanium scout ship. What is your identity code?
Identity code? Oh, you mean my name. It's Elmer Korn, sir. Biloxi Manure Hauler. I guess you're calling this little blue feller here. I'm afraid to tell you, I don't think he's going to be coming home anytime soon. He got the top of his head cut right off. He just fell on this piece of jagged metal here. If it's any consolation, though, I don't think he suffered any.
Distressful as this, many times have I told him that Earth's satellite transmissions can drain power cells. Perhaps he never get it too close to our power source.
Oh, well, I guess that's possible. Biloxi TV's just up the road here. I think he ran into a telephone pole, though.
Earthling, what is the condition of the vessel?
What's that? Oh, you mean the ship. Well, it's got a big old dent outside, and I'd say that's about all that's wrong with it. Your machinery and everything's working inside, and like I said, your friend here met a pretty bitter end, but other than that, I guess everything's all right. Say, you ever heard of seatbelts? That might have saved your friend.
Our deck can be saved, Earthling.
Oh, yeah?
You must navigate the vessel to the planet Tontanium at once.
Oh, no, I don't, sir. Now,
you must engage power cells and navigate the ship at once.
What?
Time is limited. We must examine Ardak's body immediately.
Now, sir, everybody's got to go sometime. Now, I'm awful sorry that your friend here has passed on, but I can't do nothing for you. And I got places to go. Besides, you can't do nothing for this feller. The top of his head's cut off.
Perhaps on your intellectually backward planet, a dismembered cranium is fatal. However, on our planet, our medical technology far exceeds the knowledge of even your finest surgeons. However, as we speak, Ardak's tissues deteriorate, and time is running out. So, will you navigate the ship, human?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I'll navigate the ship. I just can't say no to someone who's in need, and if you think you can save him, I'll bring the ship to your planet. You'll just have to tell me how to work it. But there's a feller in Duluth, Montana, who ain't gonna be too happy when his load of cow flop don't show up.
The alien on the ship's telescreen instructed Elmer how to navigate the saucer. He traveled billions of light years and passed through a million galaxies in a matter of seconds. According to Elmer's watch, the entire trip to the planet Tontanium took 30 minutes.
Attention, human. Engage landing gear.
Huh?
Engage landing gear.
What's that?
Engage landing gear now, human.
Okay.
Careful.
All right.
Careful, human.
Whoa.
Careful.
Whoa.
Very good, Cuban.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You will be greeted at the main gate. You may now exit the vessel.
That door opened up by itself. I guess I'm supposed to walk down this slanted walkway here. Oh, look at those little blue fellers down there. They must be my welcoming committee. Howdy, fellers.
Greetings.
Say, did you see me land that spaceship? I landed just like old Buck Rogers, and I never been behind the wheel of one in my life.
Affirmative. It was most impressive, human. We extend our gratitude to you for returning the body of Ardak to us. Premet, Zybon, take the body of Ardak to the refrigeration chambers. He is still sufficiently fresh.
Well, you ain't gonna chill him, are you? I thought you was gonna operate on him.
In due time, human. We hope you find your stay on the planet Tantanium a pleasant one.
No, sir. No, sir. I'm afraid I can't stay another second. I gotta rush home and get that load of cow dung on the road. But I do appreciate the offer, though.
Premet.
Affirmative.
Zybon. Affirmative. Him.
Hey!
Come with us.
Take the human to the holding chambers.
Hey, let me go!
Come with us! Come with us, human!
Hey, you
this
take...
way!
Hey!
He is a very fine specimen.
Specimen?
Indeed.
Hey, what do you mean, specimen? Hey, where you taking me? Hey, I don't want it! Hey! Hey, the...
Yes, he is a very fine specimen indeed. Farewell, Earthling.
Well, now, I suppose you're wondering what the aliens plan to do with our hero. Well, you can only imagine Elma's confusion as he was escorted by force to a large metal cage.
This way, human. This way. This
now,
way.
Take it easy now.
Silence.
Hey, now let me go.
Hey,
you're too rough with me now. What are you going to do?
Get into the holding cell.
Coming.
Now, silence.
This is an awful way to show gratitude. That's all I got to say. I traveled millions of miles to bring that body to your planet, and you just threw me in a cage. Well, dang you. Dang you all to heck.
Elmer, is that you?
What? Cecil Ferris?
Yeah, it's Cecil Ferris.
Well, I've been dadgum. Well, what are you doing here, Cecil?
Well, I got abducted by one of them there UFOs. And here I am with everybody else.
Well, heck, I recognize all of y'all. There's Miss Maddox over there.
Hello,
howdy,
son.
Miss Maddox.
Hello, yeah. Son.
And there's Mr. Craig. Yeah.
Howdy, Elmer.
Well, what are you all doing here?
Well, Elmer, them there aliens threw us in this cage, and we're sitting here to wait.
That's right. I read about three people disappearing this morning in the Biloxi Gazette. I thought it was a load of crock, but I guess it's true.
It's true.
Yeah,
it's true,
Elmer.
Well, hell, at least you guys were abducted. I'm here because I drove here. I thought I was helping these aliens out, but I guess I'm the big fool.
Yeah.
What do you figure they're planning to do with us?
Elmer, I kind of hesitate to tell you.
Attention, humans. It is time to take another subject.
Oh, my God.
You.
No.
Come with us.
No, not me.
It is time.
No. No.
Come now.
No, you let me go.
Come now,
you
human.
You let me go. No.
Come with us, human.
No.
Come with us.
No.
Do not struggle.
I don't want to go.
Do not struggle, human.
No, save me.
Go with your dignity.
Save me.
Go with dignity.
Save me.
Dadgum. Boy, he really kicked up the dust.
He sure did, Elmer.
Say, what are they going to do to him? Are they going to torture him?
No. Uh-uh. No.
They going to run experiments on him?
No, sonny, no.
Well, they ain't going to eat him, are they?
Bingo, Elmer, you got it.
Dadgum.
Yeah.
Well, boy, this kindly puts a damper on things.
Yeah, I've been kind of depressed here lately.
Now, Miss Maddox, you hush up that bawling. The worst thing you can do at a moment like this is to panic. Now, you just hush up all that bawling. Old Elmer's here, and he's going to do something about this mess.
At least
I think I am.
I certainly hope so, Elmer.
Well, when that alien gets back here, you let me do all the talking, all right?
Between
then and now, why don't we sing us a little song?
Oh, no.
Help cheer us up. You all know this one. Sing along with Elmer.
Okay, Elmer.
If you're happy and you know it, say I am.
I am.
If you're happy and you know it, say I am.
I am.
If you're happy and you know it, then your life will
truly show it.
If you're happy and you know it, then I am. Mr. Corn tried the best he could to raise the spirits of his fellow prisoners. However, knowing you're about to become the main course on an alien's menu tends to put one in a dampened disposition.
And the fella behind the bar said, "That ain't no dog, mister. That there's my wife."
Elmer,
that was the worst joke I have ever heard in my life.
Cecil. It's the situation we're in. Now, if we was anywhere besides in this old cage, I swear you'd be laughing to your ribs, Craig.
I don't know about that.
You see, Mrs. Maddie.
I don't think so, Elmer.
Oh, no.
I don't think so.
Wait a minute.
Oh,
now, listen
no.
to what you remember what
oh,
I said.
No.
Let me do the talking.
Attention, humans. It is time to take another subject. We will take the elderly female human.
Oh, no.
Come with us now.
No,
wait
please,
a minute.
Don't take me. Save me, Elmer. Save me, Elmer.
Yes, Miss Maddox.
Listen, sir,
if you don't mind, I'd rather go in her place.
Affirmative.
I just can't stand all this waiting. It's just eating my guts out. I'd rather just get it over with and be done with it.
Affirmative. One human is just as sufficient as another. Come with us.
Well, thank you kindly, sir. Much obliged. Well, that's okay. You don't have to drag me. I'll go on my own accord.
Silence.
You sure got a nice place here. Beautiful place.
Silence.
We gonna go in that room right there?
Affirmative.
Well, all right. I'm ready to be eaten.
Silence. Cleabat, here is the next subject.
Ah, I see you have brought our latest visitor to me. Greetings, Earthling.
Yeah, aloha. Hey, listen, feller, just what is the deal around here? What are you fellers up to? Are we your idea of fancy takeout or something?
Ow!
Silence!
There is no need to strike the human. His sarcasm is understandable. Human, I suppose you wonder why we consume Earth creatures.
Well, yes, sir, I gotta admit I am a bit curious.
Yes. Human... For billions of eons, we have sustained our race on mineral deposits mined from our planet's core. However, recently our food supply has been completely exhausted. No alternative food source has been discovered. Tantaniites die by the thousands. We consume their corpses for nutritional value, but that is insufficient. Earth is the only life-sustaining planet we have discovered. Humans are plentiful, and they are nutritionally high in value. We regret that you must die. So that we may live.
Well, I tell you, I'm not doing a big backflip with joy about it myself.
Liban, Cremat, sustain the human. Earth creature, Liban will now use a Sensitron unit to inject a paralyzing electronic charge into your body.
What?
Your body will then be dismembered and sectioned into nutrition pellets.
Oh, no.
We assure you, you will feel no pain.
Well, I wish I could say the same for you. Give me that Sensitron unit.
Return the Sensitron unit. Return the Sensitron unit to me. Return it. Return it immediately.
That's a big neck of toy, Blue Man, but I am going to give you a dose of it.
Negative.
That ought to hold you two for a while. And as for you, Doc, you better open up that door. I'm going to zap you, too.
This is foolish, human. You cannot possibly escape.
I wouldn't count on it. I'm pretty dadgum agile. Now open the door.
Very well. Elmer raced down the halls of the Tantanium Embassy, armed guards fired laser shots at him in all sides, but they could not keep up with him. Soon, Mr. Corn was at the holding cell that contained his friends.
Elmer, come save us now!
Elmer,
over here!
Hey, is everybody all right? Well, look, we're going to have to get the hell out of here. Them guards are going to be catching up with me any second now.
Right.
You ready to run like your butt's on fire?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is control panel here that operates the door. Let's just hope I get it.
Well,
look at there. I got it first off. Come on, everybody. Run. Come on, run like hell. We got to go. I know where the ships are at. I know where the saucers are kept. Come on, everybody.
The prisoners followed Elmer, feeling confident that he would lead them to safety. He herded them into one of the saucers, and then, to ensure they would not be followed, he smashed the controls of the remaining ship. By the time the aliens caught up with them, it was too late.
All right.
Elmer was zooming at warp speed towards Earth and safety.
Well, on the road again, we're on the road again. Say, how's everybody doing?
I'm doing just fine, Elmer. I sure can't wait to get back to Biloxi.
Well, it won't be too long. I'll bet we're just about 10 minutes from Earth. Oh, what's wrong, Miss Maddox?
I feel like I'm going to vomit, Elmer. Save me, Elmer.
Well, it's that warp sickness, Miss Maddox. Just put your head between your legs, honey. That's what does it.
Yes, sir.
Traveling at
Elmer,
the speed of light will do it every time.
Yes, sir. I know. I felt... Uh-oh. Now, there goes that telescreen.
Attention, human.
Uh-huh.
We implore you, return the subjects to our planet at once.
You guys must be touching the head or something. Listen, where I come from, fellers don't eat other fellers. It just ain't done. It's immoral and illegal, if I'm not mistaken. No, you're just going to be disappointed. I'm taking these people right home, and they're going to be safe and sound. Sorry.
Affirmative. Human, you are wise to take the subjects with you. We allowed our food supply to diminish. The fault is our own. Soon we will die. Soon our planet will be a barren orb floating in space. We are sorry, human. We are so sorry.
Now, I ain't going to sit here and listen to that sort of foolish talk. You sound gloomier than a hog without mud. There's an answer to everything. If you people can just stand without eating for one more day, I'll come back with a solution to your problem. I promise.
Elmer, what are you going to do?
Now, you just hold your horses, Cecil. You'll see.
After returning to Earth, Mr. Korn gathered materials needed to solve the alien's dilemma. Soon he was back on the planet Tontinium, and he was not alone.
Well, here you are.
Human. I do not wish to sound lacking in appreciation, but
What
are these strange creatures?
Oh, well, over there's a cow, you see. He's your beef. And over there next to it is a bull. And you got your chickens for eggs. And you got your hogs for your bacon products and your ham and all that. The point is, all this stuff is good to eat. You know how to fix it, right?
Remarkable. Premax. Affirmative. What is the nutritional analysis of the horned creature?
It is sufficiently high in protein, iron, and essential vitamins.
That's right, and it's good for you, too. You pull them fangs underneath that cow, you'll get milk, and that's real good. That gives you your calcium. And if you put that there horned creature, as you call it, with that cow, it'll make more cows than horned creatures.
Reproduction, a primitive Earth concept. We use a genetic duplicator.
Well, I guess that worked, too, but I think our way's a heck of a lot more fun. Anyway, all this stuff is real good for you. I also brought you some vegetables, and then I brought you some recipes to help you fix all this stuff up.
Remarkable. We can reproduce all of these food products with a duplicon. Human, you have saved our planet from inevitable doom. We extend our sincere gratitude, and we humbly apologize for the human that we have consumed. We have violated natural laws.
Oh, well, that's okay. That was the town drunk that you ate, and I don't think we're going to be missing him too much down there on Earth. As far as thanking me, sir, you don't have to bother. My mama, sweet old woman, said as long as I got food, ain't nobody in need gonna go hungry, and I've kind of followed that path. I'm just glad that you people gonna be all right.
I have one question, human.
Okay.
Does not the consumption of the creatures violate natural laws? Why did you strike me upon the cranium?
Silence, foolish one. The human is saving our lives.
I tell you, fellas, I sure would like to stay around and chew the fat with y'all, but I just can't stay another second. I'm already 2 days late on that Duluth, Montana manure haul. But I tell you what, I want you guys to not be such a stranger. Y'all stop by on Earth every now and then and visit me, you hear?
Affirmative. You are a friend to us also, human, and a savior. And please, feel free to take one of our transport vehicles with our gratitude.
Well, thank you kindly, sir. I appreciate that. I'll do that. I'll see y'all people later. Bye-bye.
It's time to hit the old warp drive here. If you're happy and you know it, say I am. I am. If you're happy and you know it, say I am. I am. Here we go.
Mr. Korn once again sped towards Mother Earth, singing a happy tune. His soul was filled with heartfelt pride, for an entire planet considered him the savior. There now, that was a painless story, wasn't it? Yes. I must admit, all this talk of food has made me hungry. I suppose if I had the appetite of one of those aliens, I would have a regular smorgasbord here in the morgue. Oh, forgive me. That was disgusting. Oh, please don't leave. I hope I haven't offended you. I was merely joking. Well, if you must go, you will return, won't you? It gets so lonely here in the morgue, and I have many stories to tell. Until then, pleasant dreams.
You have just heard Chet Cheddar's Tales from the Moor. Today's installment, Elmer versus the Invaders. The names and characters portrayed in this production are fictitious. Any similarities to actual persons, including aliens, is purely coincidental. A production by M&J. Audio Theater. For correspondence, send to M&J Audio Theater, 923 East Main, Mejia, Texas. Mejia is spelled M-E-X-I-A. The zip is 76667.
Well, okay, that's it. That's another Night Transmissions in the can. Well, almost in the can. And before I go, I'm going to give you my email address in hopes that somebody will write me. If you so dispose, I'm available at nighttransmissions@gmail.com. You can also drop by the website. There's a contact button there. Oh, the website, as you might expect, is www.nighttransmissions.com, whenever you're dealing with anything on the internet and night transmissions, www.nighttransmissions.com. There, I said it. See ya.